Let's Go Green, sponsored by Airgrid, managing and operating Ireland's electricity grid for a cleaner energy future. Check out airgrid.ie for more.
Hello, you are very welcome to this week's episode of Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. I'm your host, Aisling O'Rourke. I hope you're well as you tune in to us this week. This, if you're listening to us on FM on Monday evening, it is the annual Mother Earth Day today. 22nd of April 2024 is Mother Earth Day. And a little bit later on this week's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about why breastfeeding is more environmentally friendly than the alternatives. So it's an interesting conversation with Dr. Fionnuala Cooley. So I encourage you to stay put and keep listening to our show this week. You might remember a couple of months back, in fact, in or around this time last year, I think, we had Hans Zomer from Global Action Plan on to talk to us about the Climate Heroes campaign. Well, the campaign is back for 2024, and to discuss it with us further, we're joined now by Alex Wyatt from Global Action Plan. Alex, Hans has handed over the reins to you this year to manage the competition. What exactly is the Climate Heroes campaign?
Hi, Aisling. Thanks for having me on. Climate Heroes is a community climate challenge where members of the public log their climate friendly actions to a specialist platform, and they calculate how much they're reducing their carbon footprint by. Basically, the idea is that very often we hear we're told, you know, you have to do this, you have to turn off your lights, you have to recycle. And climate action sort of, for many people, feels like it's something that they're kind of being forced to do. Mm-hmm. And we want to kind of take a different approach maybe and make climate action a little bit more joyful, a little bit less individualized and a little bit more collective. And we want to help to support people to realize what their impact is as well. So as people are logging actions on the platform, there's this kind of fun little graphics and it's quite visual. And it shows people the cumulative effort or the cumulative impact of reducing their carbon footprint by doing these individual daily actions. So it's all about being collective. It's all about being fun. And it's also an educational piece as well, because we really want to kind of connect what individual people are doing to sort of a broader, bigger picture of climate justice and how climate change is affecting different communities around the world, not just here in Ireland as well.
And I think, like, one of the reasons I think it's a good idea, and I like that this particular competition, is because it can be quite a lonely affair trying to be more environmentally friendly. It can be overwhelming, and you can feel as an individual that your actions are not really having much of an impact, because it's very hard for us as individuals to visualize the impact on that our actions are having. So talk to me then, as you say, it's very much a community-based effort. So who are you looking to get involved?
So we have quite a broad view of what a community can be, because there are so many ways that people arrange themselves to get together and work together on issues that are of interest to themselves. But ultimately, any group of people that's coming together, we'd like them to join together with a team, enter through the website climateheroes.ie, and then to just log their actions onto the platform.
Like, do I need to be active in the Tidy Towns or in a particular organisation? You know, how might I get involved?
Yeah, so any community group, whoever they might be and whatever joins them together, can join the challenge just by signing up at www.climateheroes.ie. I suppose what's really good as well is about this competition is that in the first few weeks, in the run-up to the competition, we wanted to spotlight some really, really positive examples of community groups that were taking positive action in the local area. So we had a series of webinars prior to the competition itself, where, different groups were sharing activities they were doing around transportation, making transportation more accessible, or really positive things, or examples around food, like the efforts that they were making in terms of food or in terms of reducing consumption locally as well. So, you know, yes, there's individual actions and there's things that we can all do individually and change our individual behaviors. But also we really want to spotlight the amazing things that community groups are doing collectively and together to highlight those and magnify those.
So then, you know, could perhaps a workplace get involved? Could a school or a college take part?
Sort of. Workplace, this is funded by Irish Aid to support community groups to get involved in the competition. So we're not really targeting businesses with this one. We do have a separate businesses competition called the Climate Competition. But schools as well. We're not fully set up for schools in that we don't have the appropriate, for child protection purposes, we're not engage with schools, but mostly focus on communities.
I'm just thinking of maybe some examples. So perhaps maybe a local men's shed group or an active retirement group, you know, something. It doesn't need to necessarily be a formalized community that lives in a specific area. It could be stretched from across a town or a village.
Whatever brings people together. We've got a lot of community centres that are entered as well. Where just sort of people are coming in, they've stuck up a sign up notice on their board in the community centre, and then people are signing up through that. Or migrants' rights groups as well. Migrant advocacy groups are also. We've got a couple of those from across the country as well. So any way that people come together, and they don't even need to be focused on the environment or on climate change either as their main reason for being together. It is just a way to start conversations and to kind of broaden that engagement.
Well, Alex Wyatt of Global Action Plan Ireland, thank you so much for talking to us here on Let's Go Green. We'll be back after the break.
Thanks, Ashton.
Let's Go Green, sponsored by Airgrid, managing and operating Ireland's electricity grid for a cleaner energy future. Check out airgrid.ie for more.
You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. And our next item is something that, to be honest, I hadn't really thought about until I got a press release into my email. So this is why I'm always saying here on the show, if there's something that you're working on or you're involved in or your community is involved in that is around environmental issues and you wanted to get a bit of airtime and a bit of discussion, feel free to get in contact with me here on Let's Go Green on Midlands 103. Hop over to midlands103.com, click on the on-air team. You'll be able to see my picture and my name, Aisling O'Rourke, and you'll be able to send me an email there to suggest items that you'd like discussed on the show. And to talk about what I'm not talking about, we're joined by Dr. Fionnuala Cooney. Now, Dr. Cooney is a doctor in the area of public health. And Dr. Cooney, you're with us today to talk about the environmental benefits of breastfeeding. And I genuinely, until I got the press release from your colleague, that had not clicked with me. So first things first, you're very welcome to Let's Go Green. Why is it that breastfeeding, when you flesh it out and you begin to think about it, I can see the connections, but we don't automatically make that connection between breastfeeding and the environment, do we?
No, thank you very much, Ash. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. Yes, and with the slogan, breastfeeding is green. And the basis of that slogan is the fact that breast milk, it's natural. Breastfeeding is sustainable food. It contributes to the prevention of global warming. It protects biodiversity. And it conserves resources. It's a natural, normal human food and a food that's used at the early stages of life. So, yeah, not everybody appreciates that, but in the knowledge of the alternatives, we do know that, you know, breast milk and breastfeeding is sustainable, it's local, it's natural, and we know that breastfeeding has significant benefits for the health of the baby, benefits for the mother, benefits for society, and I love this opportunity to say also benefits for planet Earth.
Now, I know that breastfeeding is not always a possibility for every family, for medical, you know, mental health, like multiple reasons. And the conversation that we're having here today is not to
in any way put pressure on families who are in that position or to in any way make them feel bad about their choices. But I suppose the reason it clicked for me was when I just started thinking about the conversation we are having right now, and I looked around my local supermarket and you see the industry that has come up around supporting families and the production of formula. You know, there is an industry there. There are factories there. There's a lot of plastics involved. So, you know, when you think about it a bit more and I suppose are more educated around it, you can understand why even if formula is the right choice for the family, it might not necessarily be the right choice for the planet, or it might not be as beneficial for the planet as breastfeeding is, for example. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, though, you know, this I know is a big area of concern, in particular for expectant mothers, because they want to do the right thing and they want to do what's best for their baby and protect them in whatever way they can. And in your area of work, you know, what's your message to expectant mums in particular, or new mums in areas like this? Because it can be a very sensitive topic.
Absolutely, Aisling. And I'd like to respectfully say it's more than pregnant moms. It's more than women. It's everybody's business. You know, it's been a lot of focus on women in relation to breastfeeding. What we really need is a societal shift back to the way things were pre-1950s, 1960s, where it was a natural thing to breastfeed a baby. So I fully appreciate where you're coming from. We have loads. You know, it's great that there's choice. Mm. Formula milk is a fantastic product. It's hugely important. And you're absolutely right. Not every woman can successfully, exclusively breastfeed. I fully get that. But I would very much urge people to consider breastfeeding, not only for the benefit for their baby and for themselves. I don't know if everybody fully appreciates the benefits to mothers from breastfeeding, but also to be thinking about it from the environmental, from the green agenda. And I'd like to urge youngsters, you know, young boys, girls, young men, young women, and years before they even consider having a child, just to keep that in mind, that there is an environmental cost to commercial milk. There's a carbon footprint, there's a water footprint, or there's also a waste issue in relation to packaging and unused formula milk. There is an environmental cost, whereas breast milk and breastfeeding, it's sustainable, it's natural. It's not easy. Breastfeeding is not easy. It's natural, but it takes a lot of work, and women require support both within their family, within community, and across society to do the work of breastfeeding. I personally feel that society don't pay enough regard to the work that women do in breastfeeding. I don't mean it's as well as valued as it could be. It's hard work. It's quite a commitment, and it should be valued. But I'd like people to think beyond not only the important health benefits of breastfeeding, but to think about the environmental perspective as well. So I don't want to be lecturing, but I'd like to very much encourage just a shift in this direction. I suppose the other thing, Aisling, is when we think about planetary health and climate change, you know, there's a very, very important, strong message about accessing local food, accessing local sustainable food, food that hasn't been ultra-processed, you know, natural foods. And I'd like to put breastfeeding in that frame. I don't think there's anything more local to a baby than breast milk. You know, it's a local, sustainable, unprocessed product. There's no heating. There's no waste of niche breastfeeding. Babies take what they need, and that's it. It really is the way ahead. We need to get back to the way we used to do things for feeding babies, for feeding of young children, and for, you know, feeding of adults. We need to get back to local, sustainable food that hasn't traveled significant air miles, food that hasn't been ultra processed, natural, minimally processed food. So I would like to think breastfeeding as part of that bigger picture, you know, the feeding of the infant, the feeding of the child of beyond. So apologies, Ashley. Sorry, we'll just ask.
And Dr. Cooney, like, I think you mentioned there around the societal support, and I have family members who live in different parts of Asia. And there, the culture is quite different, where when there's a newborn, the mother of the mother who's given birth moves in with the family for a period of time to be there to support, because it's exhausting, it's stressful, it's exciting, it's terrifying, it's a roller coaster of emotions. And we would have had, perhaps not the mother-in-law moving in with the family traditionally in Ireland, but we would have come from a tradition of community support where it would have been commonplace, you know, perhaps when my grandparents were alive, for food to be dropped in after a new baby was born, or someone to come and even offer to do the laundry for you or help with the housekeeping or entertain an older child. And we do, I think, we have made a change. We've evolved to perhaps not be as good at offering support, but also not as good at accepting that kind of support as well. And that, I think, is something that we need to do a bit better on, really, isn't it?
I fully agree. We can see a lot of really good practices in many cultures where a mother of a newborn is really treated like a queen. She comes home and everything is done around her, and her job is to recover and to feed the baby. And it really is nice to witness. And people often travel to Ireland, you know, people new to the country, family come here, and they just provide that support that does everything to reduce the stress on the mom and to give her the opportunity to spend as much time skin to skin with her little baby or babies and feed them in the natural way. But then you look at what we have in the Western culture. We have a lot of images of celebrities emerging from maternity hospitals in their super slim outfits and out socializing. And it really is telling a lie. You can't possibly get back to, you know, pre-pregnancy ways of social interaction, you know, sorting out your appearance and your style and successfully breastfeed a baby. So there are commercial interests that I believe, it's a personal opinion, but there are commercial interests which very much undermine the intuitive, natural way of going through the process of becoming a new parent and the early weeks and months of parenting. And I suppose that is the big thing. Like, it's breastfeeding, it's not a commercial product. Nobody profits from breastfeeding as opposed to other ways of feeding babies. In fact, the only people who profit from the breastfeeding is the baby and mother, really. The baby has all the health benefits because it's more than nutrition. Breast milk has live elements that protect the baby as well as provide nutrition. And then mothers gain so much from breastfeeding. It's very helpful in the recovery phases after delivery. It reduces the risks of obesity and diabetes. It reduces the risk of breast cancer and ovarian cancer. Not everyone knows that. So there are short-term and long-term benefits both for the breastfeeding mother as well as for the baby. But yeah, unfortunately, society isn't currently providing enough supports for women when they're breastfeeding. And certainly my own health service has a lot more that we can do, and community should be doing a lot more. But if there's a lot of tension here between the portrayal of what it's like to be a mother of a newborn and what the actual reality is.
And like, as someone who, well, I was born in the 80s, but I remember the 90s very well, and that heroin chic look. And, you know, my generation of Irish women were brought up with that very pressurized way to look perfect. And I think that's what we're now seeing, is that our generation are, we're becoming mothers and we're feeling that long-term effect of that societal pressure and those awful magazines we used to all read as teenagers. What therefore, you know, can, and I'm just really conscious that it's quite possible there's a new parent listening to us having this conversation today, and things might not be going as swimmingly as we'd like, and they might be feeling very tired and very stressed out and just inadequate because maybe they're not able to breastfeed like they imagined they would, or things are not as easy as they imagined they would be. And just because we mentioned about the availability of supports, if someone is listening to the conversation and they are struggling, where do you turn as a new parent in the system, where if you're having difficulty with breastfeeding, if baby's not sleeping and you're just driven demented because you haven't slept for a couple of days, where should we turn?
I would suggest, it depends, each person's circumstance is different, but family, partner, family, very important. If people are offering support, accept it. As you mentioned earlier, nobody can. It's very difficult to raise a baby on your own. You know, it takes a village to raise a child. I think we have to get away from that independent, go alone, I'm superwoman, I can do everything, and move into the new space of, yes, we're all going to work at this together, and utilize as much support as you can through partner, family, friends, neighbours. And then, of course, there are the health services, public health nurses visit new mothers, and GPs, etc. You have the health service in the community. And then, of course, there are excellent resources available on the web. The My Child website, the HSE My Child website, is very helpful. And you can even phone up and even speak to, you know, get an opportunity to get advice in relation to breastfeeding issues, as well as access to reliable information in relation to breastfeeding and in relation to child rearing and weaning, etc. So, I would suggest any mother who's listening here, who's feeling overwhelmed, to be assured everybody feels that way after having a baby. It is a huge transition. The glamorous celebrities, that's exceptional. The vast majority, and they have a whole stack of people behind them supporting them in every way. Mm-hmm. For most women, and I think about my own experiences, it is quite a transition. Feeling tired, feeling overwhelmed, and beginning to realize you need to lead other little people. That's a journey. You have to travel, and it's important to avail of as much support as you can.
And it's not a sign of failure.
No.
You know, like I'm an only child. I was raised by two working parents. I went to a childminder from, I think my mother back then had to go back to work after when I was 12 weeks old.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I was quite frankly raised by my local village. You know, it was a community. And I can confidently say I benefited from that. So, you know, as like I am the person who offers to do the babysitting because I've not yet been gifted with a family of my own. So if you're lucky enough to have a friend offering support and help, I can promise you they wouldn't be offering if they didn't mean it. They wouldn't be offering if they didn't care. And support is available. And if you are feeling really under pressure and really challenged as a new parent, and I know that it's very difficult at the moment across the Midlands to get appointments in your local GP surgery, but do make that phone call and ask for help and explain the difficulties. And if the GP can't see you, perhaps the practice nurse could, or the public health nurse could. Support is available, you just need to pick up the phone.
And actually, I should have mentioned, I forgot to mention, because they're very prominent in my mind, are the breastfeeding support groups. There is a phenomenally helpful service, great reflection of social capital in Ireland, whereby we have volunteer support groups for breastfeeding. And I'll just call them out. Kudju, La Leche League, and Friends Breastfeeding. There are three different voluntary organisations that provide, you know, different levels of support. but they have a range of breastfeeding support groups where moms can go and meet other moms. And I know from experience, it's very helpful for people to go even before baby arrives. You know, when you're expecting your baby. And these groups very much welcome expectant mothers. So you can go while you're expecting your baby, find out where you can park the car, where the building is, go in, meet the group. And then it's lovely then to witness a few minutes later, mom coming back with her baby or babies. And you'll see people welcome coming in. And it's an opportunity just to talk to moms on the same journey and talk about breastfeeding and talk about anything. Talk about all range of practical things from slings to prams to whatever. But a lot of people make very good friendships there. And some people might be put off by it. You know, they might be thinking, God, so much to manage to actually go out and meet a group. So don't push yourself, but you can, if you can, it's good to join those groups. And if you can't get out, there is telephone advice, you know, there's supports there. So you can Google those and get details about those voluntary organizations, Kudu, La Leche League, and Friends of Breastfeeding. They have services all over the country, and they're hugely supportive.
And at the end of the day, like, every family will make the choices that are right for you, but don't forget that those support services are available, even just to answer some questions, because it's a very new thing. And there is, unfortunately, no rule book to becoming a parent. While there'll be lots of people who'll tell you what to do, we all have to figure out what's right for us. Well, Dr. Fionnuala Cooney, public health doctor with the HSC, thank you very much for joining us on Let's Go Green.
Let's Go Green, sponsored by Airgrid, managing and operating Ireland's electricity grid for a cleaner energy future. Check out airgrid.ie for more.
You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. We're turning to school now, and I don't know about you, but when I was in primary school in particular, the nature table was always of interest to me, and it was something that in my particular primary school was present in every classroom. And, you know, my family on both sides come from farming backgrounds. I can remember distinctly being sent out to bring in samples of wool from lambs, or, you know, bits of foliage from the garden, or, you know, something that you'd pick up on a walk with the dog and you'd bring it in to show teacher the following day. And it was very much part and parcel of my experience of primary school. But apparently that's not the case anymore. And to talk about why, we're joined by Director of People and Culture, Blonid O'Regan, from the Syro Pollinator Project. And that's basically a project around biodiversity in schools. Blonid, you are very welcome to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103.
Thank you, Aisling.
So Blonid, first things first, tell our listeners, what exactly is Syro?
So Syro is a fully fibre broadband network that operates across the whole country. We're a wholesale provider, so we sell our products to service providers such as Air, Vodafone, Virgin Media, etc.
So we all avail of the services, basically. If we do anything online, Syro provides the infrastructure for that service. Yeah. Now, yeah. I asked you that because what does the connection here between broadband and biodiversity? So how did this all come about?
So we believe that our product is supporting people to be more sustainable, to work from home, to access more closely their local communities. And from that point of view, we're very interested in projects that reach out to our communities and that are sustainably based. And also as a company, we have a lot of sustainability initiatives. So at any given time, we have sustainability projects going on to improve our own performance in that area.
And as part of this work, you have been surveying teachers about biodiversity in schools. So what have you found out?
So we found out that 46% of teachers did not have a nature table in their classroom. So that's just under half of the respondents. And the reason they gave was just that they didn't have enough space. And then what was interesting was 90% of the people surveyed said they did have a nature table when they were in school themselves. So, and the majority have expressed a strong interest in more resources to help them teach about nature and biodiversity.
Because it is very hard to teach nature without having something to show in the classroom. And yes, I know you can bring kids outdoors on nature walks and all of that, but like, we have bad weather in this country. So, you know, you can't be planning your day around whether or not you can bring the kids outdoors to teach a particular half an hour of school. You know, being able to bring the nature indoors has always been of benefit. I think we've all benefited from that, those of us that experienced it. It's quite surprising, I think, because while we might have discussed, you know, in variety of media outlets and all that over the years, like, you know, all the schools are absolutely bulging at the seams and we know we need more resources. I don't think any of us has ever occurred to us that the nature table might have been the victim of this, really.
Yeah.
We haven't made the connection. So is there, you know, as you say there, that there is an interest in having more environmental issues discussed in school and educating kids about nature. Do you see any signs of improving this for teachers? And like, you, what can be done to help teachers to pass on the information to kids?
Yeah. So this particular initiative is a joint initiative with Biodiversity in Schools, which is a social enterprise organization. This is our second year running the program. And what last year was our first year, and we were overwhelmed with, we weren't expecting to have the reach that we had. And last year we reached about 3,500 school children. So I think it's definitely a project, and we have a project going on in every county in Ireland. So it's definitely something that really resonated with people. So I think supporting the organisations such as Biodiversity in Schools is funding education into schools and I guess helping to bring the knowledge to the teachers. I know last year when we launched, one of the teachers was saying that very much dependent on a individual teacher's passion is what really has the biodiversity. We launched it in a local school in around Tarrig Mines last year. And the teachers said it very much was a personal thing for teachers. So I think with more resources and I guess there needs to, ideally you'd like maybe more input from the Department of Education that it should go on the curriculum. Mm. I could be bold enough to say that, but you know, it feels like we were surprised when we got into when we started working the space that there was such a gap. I mean, it was a really it was great for us to feel like we can really make a difference with the initiative.
And I think, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier on this week's episode of Let's Go Green about the deposit return scheme and, you know, and accessibility. And, you know, there is a bit of a theme going on this week's show about us going back to the way we used to do things in some instances. And perhaps we do need to put it more on the curriculum at primary level. And like those, I remember being brought out to the bog from primary school and being shown, you know, this is the bog, this is where this particular orchid grows, and, you know, like basic education to show children, you know, where their food comes from, why it's, you know, why animals need to be cared for in particular ways. But as you say, if the teachers don't have the resources, then they can't do that work.
Yeah, no, you're right. Because I've been surprised with my own daughter. She's 9 and everything is an acorn. So, and I said, oh, that's a pine cone. And she's like, oh, I found this acorn in the garden. And I was like, I don't think we've ever seen an acorn. So, you know, so you do feel the gap even at a simple level.
So this pollinator project then, what exactly does it involve? I know you mentioned it's in every county in the country, but what exactly is it? What will children and teachers be doing?
Yeah, so there we send out... So the packs are sent out, so it's a biodiversity kit, so for schools with seeds and resources so that they can creative pollinator friendly school spaces, so somewhere a garden or flower bed. There's workshops run then by biodiversity experts, so it's delivered in the school. And I guess for us, we're a small company, so we don't have any of that, those kind of resources. So this is the value of the partnership. And then they provide education, or we provide educational resources and tools for teachers. And then the schools are given the option to take the pollinator pledge, so they can commit to a number of simple actions, such as reduce the mowing of grass, donate some unused pitch to pollinators for the summer break, and to map their actions. So again, last year, I think we had, sorry, I'm just checking the actual numbers, there was 323 schools took the pledge. So
it's a fantastic number to see schools involved. And I know even through a colleague of a school in Dublin, where they have some pollinator planters on their rooftop of the building because they happen to have a flat roof, and that's the space that they have to use. So schools are being very innovative and creative in participating in things like this. How do, if there is somebody listening from a school here in the Midlands that wants to participate, how do they find out more?
So the details are on our website, sara.ie, under our sustainability section. So they can just access through the website.
So sara.ie, and then when you go onto the website, look at the sustainability section.
Yes. And actually, in addition, we're running two competitions this year. So one for schools where they can win a prize of €500 for a garden fund for their school, and separately, the most pollinator-friendly family to win a day out in Dublin's Airfield estate. So sara.ie to find out all the details.
All right. Well, we might have some healthy competition then in that case. Well, Blanid O'Regan of Syro, thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode of Let's Go Green to talk us through your biodiversity and pollinator in schools project. We have the details again after the break. But for now, Blanid, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Let's Go Green, sponsored by Airgrid, managing and operating Ireland's electricity grid for a cleaner energy future. Check out airgrid.ie for more.
You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. Now, it is the time of the year when, over the last number of weeks, each of the main political parties have been holding their ardéisne. And I've been watching them all quite closely to see if anything was said at any of these gatherings that might be relevant to bring you on our programme here about the environment and mitigation measures when it comes to climate change. Well, Minister Eamon Ryan, Minister for the Environment, spoke at the weekend, and I suppose being that he is Minister for the Environment, he did speak about the environment and efforts that are being made. And one thing that's been picked up since his speech on Saturday night and was in the papers on Sunday, and indeed discussed on other broadcast outlets on Sunday, were his comments around data centres. Now, Minister Eamon Ryan has said that the government is not opposed to more data centres, but I do know that for many climate activists, there are massive concerns around data centres, concerns around the amount of water that they use, the amount of electricity, the amount of pressure that they put in turn on the overall system. But of course, you know, in the world that we live in today, we can't function without data centres. And an awful lot of Irish companies are very heavily reliant on the expansion of data centres here so that their small and medium enterprises can continue to grow. So I thought it would be of interest to you to bring you just some of Minister Eamon Ryan's comments. And these ones are from his discussion with Anton Savage on News Talk on Sunday morning.
In the last two decades, our emissions per person, per capita in this country dropped 50%. We cut them in half, which is fantastic in terms of the, compared to other countries. We are actually good at going green. Our population has grown, so our emissions went up. But at the same time, our income went up 43%, our average income. So you can actually retain prosperity and be good at the environment. Now, data centers, which are a very important industry for our country, bring real benefits. It's not just in their own operations, but a lot of the technology companies that are based here, whose profits are a large source of our tax income, that those data centers are central to their business, and having them here helps us locate other businesses here connected to them. So we do want data centers. But there are limits. Firstly, we're the data center capital of Europe. We have more than anyone else, certainly per capita. We're way ahead of anyone else, and that's good. But there are certain constraints. Most of them are in Dublin, for reasons not necessarily about the energy, but for reasons about the telecommunications latency, complex reasons. But we have limited availability in Dublin of the electricity grid to be able to build more in Dublin. And secondly, we also have limited power capacity because they use so much power. We have to expand. We have to start delivering the likes of the offshore wind projects to be able to have the power to run them. But also, we want to start building outside Dublin. Go back to what I said earlier on about not everything tipping over into the East Coast, and there are ways we can start doing that now. But another reason is there is a climate limit for every industry, and data centers don't have an opt out. Now, you can't be saying to the farmers, "You have to do this." Oh, but the data centers have an exception; they have a pass. No. It is possible for us to develop data centres in a climate zero way. I've been talking to most of the companies last week. I think I've probably met every single, not just the big international companies, but also the Irish companies making them. They agree with me, I think, that actually their future has to be zero carbon. And you can do that when you get a combination of renewable power to run them, battery and other storage systems to give flexibility and backup at the time the wind isn't blowing, flexibility in their demand, so running them in a kind of clever way, and also using the waste heat for district heat.
It was interesting there, I thought, that his comments in relation to using the excess, the waste energy from these data centres for district heating, that there could be more innovative ways that data centres can provide for the communities around them. So that is something that is the future, really. So it would be interesting to see if any of them do actually start making these efforts. And it's something that I do want to discuss further on the show in the coming weeks. But I just thought I'd bring you some of his comments over the weekend around data centres and whether or not there is, in fact, a climate limit on more data centres. I think it is fair to say that Dublin has reached its limit, that if we were to have more data centres, that they need to be in other parts of the country where there may be more capacity. But you know, you talk to those who are experts in electricity generation and they will say that the country at whole is under pressure and that it's, you know, it's not exactly spare capacity anywhere. So we do need to take an overall look at data centres and what we can do to make them more sustainable and beneficial for the country as a whole, but still remain competitive internationally. Because, of course, we do need these companies to support Irish-based entrepreneurs as well. Well, we are close on time for this week's episode of Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. Thanks to all of the contributors on this week's episode of the show. If you're interested in participating in the Global Action Plan Climate Heroes competition, just check out Global Action Plan. Give them a Google and see what they have to offer and whether or not you'd like to participate. The local enterprise office in Offaly has also been in touch. They have a business breakfast briefing this coming Thursday morning in Tullamore that they wanted me to give a mention to. So if you are a member of the local enterprise office network in County Offaly, they have an event coming up on Thursday morning, a breakfast event, which unfortunately I can't attend myself because I have to be elsewhere for 9 a.m. But I think it starts at about 8 or 8.30. So if you want more details on that, check out Local Enterprise Office Offaly and the staff there will give you full details. And of course, each and every episode of Let's Go Green is available on podcast, either through midlands103.com or, you know, the usual spots, the likes of Apple and Spotify as well. So if you've missed any episode of Let's Go Green, feel free to check out our back catalogue. That is all I have for this week's episode of Let's Go Green. But I will say, if there's anything you'd like to feature on the show or have me mention on the show, please do feel free to get in contact with me. You can email me on hello@thecommunicationscoach.ie or message me directly through midlands103.com. Click on the on-air team, look for my name, Aisling O'Rourke, and send me an email from the page there. That's it for this week. Have a great week, stay safe, and I'll be back same time next week with another edition of Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103.
Let's Go Green, sponsored by Airgrid, managing and operating Ireland's electricity grid for a cleaner energy future. Check out airgrid.ie for more.